Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
Yes, what's happening? I'm on the road, as you can see, and hopefully you can hear me. I'm hoping everyone can hear me. Let me double check, because I do have the mic on, but I am stupid and forgot my headphones. So hopefully we are we're in good shape today. 99 in your parts, John Joseph. My goodness, man. Is everybody hearing me okay? I just want to make sure everybody's hearing me okay. We're on a remote setup today. We're traveling for business, and I want to make sure that we are good. Can hear you loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Catalina. Very nice to see you. It is nice to see everybody. Hello, Humboldt Fats, and hello, Skills. Good to see you, AJ Cruz. The normal crew is here. I love it. Rocking new era this morning. Good morning. Good morning to everybody. And welcome to a Friday. Today's Friday. Friday edition of the show. I'm all kind of mixed up because, like I said, we're traveling today. But episode 154, 49ers camp. We'll get into that. Ricky Pearsall's hammy. It on the surface is not that big of a deal, but to me, it makes me a little nervous. I'll explain why, although Eric Branch in the Chronicle today put something together that was like, hey, but what about this? We'll get into that. J.R. Brown, I did not know this, had ankle surgery on the offseason, and so he is a scratch. The defense yesterday, not exactly the defense that Robert Saleh and company is hoping for once the season gets going. Speaking of health, CMC again reiterated, and I was down there and talked to CMC, I don't know, a month or so ago, when they first got together for the 2025 season, and he declared himself healthy, and a lot of people were like, well, I don't think he's healthy, and I'm all these different things, and it's like, well, we'll see, but the bottom line to the whole thing is declared healthy again by Kyle Shanahan, and you saw him out on the field a little bit, so it looks like he is healthy. Wide receiver need, I'm over that. Hang on a second, let me move over a little bit. Can I move? There you go. Wide receiver need. The wide receivers yesterday were Robinson, Cowing, Jennings, and Watkins. Watkins, by the way, I watch him a lot at Ole Miss, ran a 4.37 40. I think he might be one of those guys that surprised out of a rookie class, but the first three, Robinson, Cowing, and Jennings, were the receivers. We'll get into that. Buster talks. Buster is Buster. Behind the scenes, he'll give you some things, and he is kind of funny and all that. And like I said, John Shea wrote a great piece about how Buster, how inclusive Buster is in this whole process. And they knocked down a wall in a suite, and how everybody's hanging out together, and it's all kumbaya, and everything's great. Well, everything was great in March and April, but they are 12 and 13 in May as they take on the Fight and Fish in Miami tonight. So, or today. So we'll see. But maybe they can get a 500 record in May, but that's not good. So they were good in March and April. We give them their flowers. They're still obviously in contention, but they've got some issues. And obviously Buster talked about catching first base, a number of different things yesterday. So we'll give you a little bit of that today as well. Giants may, as it is talked about, Knicks win. So my conspiracy theory is still alive. Rocco passes away. We've got to give proper eulogy to Clay's dog. And then one thing I did forget, there is a sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol, which is a little bit, it's weird. I'm not going to lie to you. It's weird. And so we'll get into that conversation as well. So good morning to everybody. Good morning to Joy, and 420 is here. And Daniel, good morning to you, my friend. It is great to see you on episode 154 for Ricky Pearsall and the injury. And let's just start there with 49ers camp, things we learned from 49ers camp. And oh, by the way, before I jump into everything, because I'm so excited to jump into everything, a couple of quick things. John Lund Unleashed, please make sure you are subscribed. I would really appreciate if you were subscribed to John Lund Unleashed on YouTube as we continue to grow the community. Please hit us with a like today before you get out of here. Maybe you're watching on Instagram, or maybe you're watching on X, one of those places could be LinkedIn. Pop on over to YouTube if you would. Go to John Lund Unleashed. Hit us with a like. Hit us with a subscribe. And please get those alerts on, because we put stuff out all through the day, even when I'm traveling. Bottom line is, if something happens, I'll just grab my phone, my handy-dandy little phone, which, by the way, is cracked. But I'll grab my handy-dandy little phone here, and we'll get things going. So we are always media 24/7, 365, so you never know when we're going to pop stuff on the YouTube channel. And also on the Bay Area Sports Collective, I tell you this all the time, it's not only me. It's Tom Tolbert, who had Tim Kawakami in the backyard. Last week, he had Steve Curry. You never know who's going to pop up drinking beers, hanging with Tommy. So Tolbert in the backyard and the Tom Tolbert Show. Polymax articles with our good friend, Creative Tony. And that's on weekdays, except for Wednesday night when they do the flight night. So make sure that you hit those guys up. Amy G has joined us as well, which is awesome. Rod Brooks has joined us. Jeremy Affel has joined us on the Bay Area Sports Collective. So we continue to grow that channel. So make sure you're subscribed there as well. So there you go. John Lund Unleashed, Bay Area Sports Collective. Thank you for watching this morning on X and other places at John Lund Radio. Really appreciate you. And again, anything you have to say, comments, questions, thoughts, you can put them right underneath here if you're watching a little bit later. And if you 100% want to get your things on the show, make sure that you hit me with a super. All right, let's get going for episode 154, 49ers camp. And this is just, it's kind of like last year, and you and I have talked about this together ad nauseum, which is that it just got off to a bad start with Brandon Ayuk situation and Trent Williams situation. It was just one after the other after the other, and they're not controllable situations. Ricky Pearsall didn't ask to be shot last year. So you just kind of got that vibe, and you've been a sports fan long enough, just like me, where you just know when something's cursed and you know when something's charmed, right? 2021 Giants just came out of nowhere, and you're like, I don't know, but let's just keep riding the wave. I have no idea where this came from, but we're just going to keep riding it. And you just roll, right? And you know your season's charmed. And just everything that they touched that season, it was charmed. In terms of last season, we knew pretty much from Ayuk, and I don't know why. It was just weird, and everybody felt off, and everything felt off, and you still thought, well, you know, Super Bowl, they're still that team, and then just injuries and weirdness, and just you just felt it all year. And we sat there and we went, it's going to turn around, never did. So the only reason I'm bringing this up on Pearsall is, and I think I have a little thing here from Mayoko, so just to make it officially, let me see here, let me move this up. Sorry, we're on the run the backup computer, so it takes me sometimes a little bit. But so if you don't believe me, and I know you do, but there's great credibility in Matt Mayoko. Ricky Pearsall has a tweaked hamstring and probably will not be doing any work during spring drills and OTAs, Kyle Shanahan said. All right. In and of itself, what the heck was that? In and of itself, that is really no big deal, right? Who cares? Ricky Pearsall tweaked the hamstring, whatever. And Eric Branch pointed out, because I was like all ranting and ready, and I'm going to talk about Pearsall and the injury and what the hell. And Eric Branch in the Chronicle this morning brought up a good point. Somebody asked him, Pearsall's hurt again. And he said, well, he's never missed a regular season game, and he didn't miss a game in college with a football-related injury. Now, he was out last year with the hammy in camp, which didn't help things. And then, of course, he got shot, and he missed those first four games of the season because he got shot. So that's not really his fault. And maybe there's no basis for this whatsoever, but I've told you all offseason about how important offseason is. And now it's a tweaked hammy, but he's not going to be back until training camp. And for a young wide receiver, that's a lot of time to miss. And for a young wide receiver trying to work better with Brock Purdy, that's a lot of time to miss. So as we look at the players who are maybe the most important players, and I'm a little discouraged this morning, some of the most important players for the 49ers, if you had to rank them, I don't know if Pearsall would be number one on the list, but he'd be pretty high up there. Because as I put the wide receivers up there, as I just jumped down a little bit, the wide receivers yesterday running around, and again, there's not a game till September, so let's not panic too much, Lund. But Robinson, Cowing, Jennings with an assist from Watkins, those are your wide receivers. That's not going to get it done. That's not upper echelon. If you look at what the Rams are going to throw out there with Davante Adams and Puka Nacua, or Philadelphia with the crew they've got, or Detroit with the crew they've got, that's nowhere close. And if you're a 49ers fan, what you're doing is you're comparing yourself to those teams, right? And you're not going to be great in every position group. I understand that. But I've said this whole time, okay, Kittle's back and CMC's back, and they're going to score points. And defensively, especially early in the season with all these young guys are going to play, I don't care what anybody says, they're going to struggle because these young guys have to play. And whether they start or not is really not that relevant. It's kind of like, you know, who's in for the Warriors in the final 5 minutes of the game. What's really relevant is who gets the majority of the snaps. I really don't care who starts. And they have no choice, like I said, up front, and we'll talk about it a little bit later when we talk about the defense, but they don't have a choice but to play a lot of young defensive players. So offensively, the way that this team is going to score or win is they're going to score points. And with McCaffrey and Kittle and, you know, and Brock signing his contract and hoping, praying that the offensive line's a little bit better, that was kind of the way to go, right? Was offensively, they're going to score points. Defensively, special teams, they got a new punter now and Thomas Morstead, you know, whatever. Wisnowski's gone. That doesn't really do anything for me. But hopefully the special teams are going to be better just overall. So two of the three phases, you're like, okay, they'll score points and they'll be better with special teams. Don't know about the defense. And now Ricky Pearsall's out and you're going, all right, in and of itself, Ricky Pearsall being hurt is not that big of a deal. But in the if you kind of widen out the lens a little bit, guy was hurt last year with a hamstring. Guy got shot, not his fault, but still happened. He's missed a ton of time. And now you're telling me he's got a tweaked hamstring, which to me, it's more than a tweak of a hamstring. If he's going to be gone until training camp, which we're not even to June yet. We're going to be tomorrow, but we're still 6 weeks, 7 weeks away. So he's not going to be able to throw with Brock Purdy, run, do anything. Now he's starting from ground zero in training camp. And that's not good. I mean, it's just, and it's an ominous sign more than anything else. So maybe it's nothing. But also to me, what it is it's kind of like what 2024 was, right? Where it's like, oh, man, here we go again. Like, that's your mentality. Ricky had a hammy last year. Ricky got shot last year. Now Ricky's got a hammy this year, and he's not going to be working with Brock. And if you look at Ricky Pearsall's last two games of last season, he was really good. And to me, again, I don't know how you want to rank him, but Ricky Pearsall's in the top few in terms of if the 49ers have a good season, what are they going to do? What is going to be the reason why they would have a good season or they wouldn't have a good season? Ricky Pearsall is probably in the top two or three in that regard. So to have him have a hamstring, while in and of itself is not a huge deal, certainly it is a fairly big deal and it is at worst or best. How is it worst or best? An ominous sign to his season, because that's what we saw last year, right? Any type of thing, especially at the receiver position, that you're going, uh-oh, what's that? So while it seems like it's being downplayed a little bit, a tweak of a hamstring is so for 6 weeks, he's not going to be available, has a tweaked hamstring and probably will not be doing any work, doing any drills in OTAs. That means he's not going to be ready till training camp, which is like 6 or 7 weeks away. So to me, that's more than a tweak. So there's the Ricky Pearsall situation, and let me know if I'm overreacting on this whole thing. But again, a tweak is one thing, but it was a hamstring last year. It was a shooting. It's a hamstring. He's not working out. He's not working with Brock. And if you see those wide receivers who were on the field last week, you're looking at Robinson, Cowing, Jennings. That's not going to get it done. That's not good enough. Now, that opens up the door to what a lot of people are talking about is, and I talked about this with Scott Reese on Sunday night on Cron, and then a lot of people have picked up on discussing it, which is, okay, well, Amari Cooper's out there. I wouldn't mind it at my number. If I'm the 49ers, does Amari Cooper make sense? Yeah, I was surprised that he was still out there. He's not the guy that was really, really good as the end of his tenure with the Raiders and good with the Cowboys. I think he's always been a little bit overrated. He's not a burner. He's going to make plays. If it's third and six, he's going to make the catch and make the play. Now, he's had some drops in his career, but he wouldn't be a bad addition is what I'm saying until Brandon Ayuk came back. To me, in hearing a little bit of buzz and texting with a couple of people yesterday, they liked what Jordan Watkins did. Now, I can't believe that I didn't start with this as far as any kind of OTAs, training camp. You know my thoughts on spring training as well, which is let's pump the brakes a little bit. Guys running around in shorts, you know, you're just kind of getting your feet wet in this whole thing. They're not doing anything in terms of, you know, coverages or planning or there's nothing of that nature going on in these kind of camps. It's just running around, getting to know the playbook, all those kind of things. So when you look at a 4-3-7 guy, yeah, when you can't really get physical with them, you don't have any pads on, anything like that, a 4-3-7 guy for the 49ers at wide receiver is probably going to pop. And he's got fresh legs. He's feeling good. He's a rookie. He's like, you know, probably going 100 miles an hour. He's bouncing up and down. So, yeah, Jordan Watkins, that's a situation where he could look good. Having said that, so what? You know, if somebody pops a little bit, somebody pops a little bit, and that's good. And they need it from their rookie. So what's funny is that we've talked, and I have too. Mikel Williams has got to be great. And by the way, Fred Warner mentioned two rookies, Mikel Williams and Nick Martin. So if Fred Warner's mentioning your name, good thing. All right. So I've talked about Mikel Williams. I've talked about Collins. I've talked about West. I've talked about, you know, the safety out of Kansas State. We've talked so many times about all these different players, but we really haven't talked about Jordan Watkins at all. And there's a need at wide receiver. So some of it is going to come down to the fact that the decision makers who actually know this stuff, rather than speculate about this stuff, do they believe that another rookie that they could have to rely on, and just using logic and math, it's not logical to count on all these rookies that they're counting on. We've talked about that already. But one guy we haven't talked about is Watkins. So some of the discussion is going to be, I'm sure, amongst those not in the know, the media. Well, they need another wide receiver. Amari Cooper is out there. But could this Watkins kid be something? I watched him at Ole Miss. I liked the pick. When they made the pick, it was kind of downplayed because everybody was looking so much at the defense and all the other names. And he's kind of gotten lost in this shuffle, but I like the kid. So it may be that the powers that be with the 49ers who really believe this stuff are thinking to themselves, hey, you know what? We don't need to trade for an Amari Cooper. Because remember, they just let a bunch of veteran goes or bunch of veteran players go. So I'm just using logic here. It's my logic, so it's probably flawed. But are they going to say no to a vet, yes to a vet? On the back end is a safety, I would, and we're going to get to something else in just a second. But I think it's critical that they get a safety. We'll do that in a minute. But wide receiver-wise, how are you going to spend those resources if they think Watkins can play? But again, the Pursaw thing is something that you got to keep an eye on, because although, as Eric Branch astutely points out, he has not missed a regular season or college game based on a football-related injury. A shooting is not a football-related injury, obviously. So that's a little bit different, but still, it's just, like I said, it's ominous at worst. Ominous is all I'm saying. Somebody pointed this out. I was going to get into this anyway. There you go. Jair Brown will be out until training camp after going ankle surgery. They got to go get a safety. I don't think there's any question about it. They got to go get a safety. I mean, period. I was the one who mentioned Julian Blackman because I was pounding the table for Julian Blackman last offseason. And then he re-signed in Indianapolis for another year, had another nice season. He was only like 27, 28 years old. I don't know why he's still out there as a free agent. I'm not saying he's a top free agent. I'm saying he's a really nice player, and he's not overpriced, and he's not 35, and he moves well. And I'm scratching my head looking at the Niners going, okay, what is it going to take? Because Malik Mustafa down, we found that out. All right, the kid from Kansas State may have to take his place, Siegel. Not real comfortable with that. And then I've told you, I'm just not a Jair Brown guy. I think his lack of foot speed at free safety, and they kind of interchange the safeties. I get that, especially in today's NFL. But he runs a 4.65 on the back end, and that is scary. And he's been good, and he's been bad. I'm not a huge fan. So I think at safety, I think as far as worst position groups in the league right now, the 49ers safety spot has got to be, if it's not the worst in the league, it's damn close. So Jair Brown won't be ready until training camp. And we know how these things go. He had an offseason surgery. Is he going to be ready? Who knows? So Jair Brown is down. Malik Mustafa is down. Hufanga's gone, which I'm okay with that. Even with these injuries, I'm okay with that. I wouldn't have paid Hufanga that kind of money. And he's been injured a lot. So Hufanga, okay. But it's imperative I think they need two safeties now. Julian Blackman is out there. Justin Simmons is out there. I mean, now it's like, really? unless they have somebody that we just don't know about, their safety position is not in good shape. And so I was looking yesterday, and again, I was texting with some people, and the way the defense looked yesterday, you know, Fred Warner's out there, Nick Martin's out there, the young guys are out there, Mikel Williams, according to Fred Warner, flash. But you go back to the secondary, and it's like, whoa. I mean, there's no depth at all as far as the secondary is concerned. Renardo Green, second round pick out of Florida State last year. He's got to be great like now. He's got to be great now. And Diamonor Lenore is going to be an outside only corner, which I don't love that. I hope Upton Stout is really, really good, because part of the greatness of Demo Lenore was he could go inside, he could go outside. That's where his value was. Good player. I thought he was a better inside corner than an outside corner, but Upton Stout is 5'8", 181. He's an inside guy. That's the only place he can play. So right now, Trey Brown, who yesterday in camp had an interception, is starting at the nickel slot. He just got hurt way too much in Seattle. He wasn't a terrible player. I remember in Oklahoma, he's not a bad player. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy, and I'm pretty surprised. And again, finances, I'm sure, played a part in it. I'm pretty surprised that the 49ers, as part of their offseason mantra, which was veterans who get hurt need not apply. And Trey Brown is the epitome of that. Injured guy, comes in cheap, but injured guy, when he played, he was fairly effective, but I mean, he wasn't great. He was pretty good when he played, but injured guy. And the whole reason you brought in Upton Stout, look, you spent a third round pick on Upton Stout. He needs to play. So Trey Brown was running with the first team. That doesn't mean anything this early in the season, but Upton Stout better be good, because what you've done is you've made Demo Lenore an outside only corner. So there's that. What else do we have from camp yesterday? Let's see. Episode 154, 49ers camp, Pearsall's hammy. Look, I'm worried. I don't care if it's a tweak. I'm worried. Brown's ankle. I'm worried. I was worried about the safety position before. CMC healthy. Did we play Kyle CMC healthy? I don't think we did yet. I don't think we've gotten any video. What's wrong with me? All right, here you go. By the way, rookie mistake, whoever had the cell phone go off during this. Here's Kyle talking about the health of one Christian McCaffrey. Now that we've been talking about non-health, here's health.
Yeah. Christian is pretty as ready as any player I've ever been around. When he gets hurt, you know, he's got to rehab and get better. Right now he's healthy as can be. We got to kind of protect him from himself. But Christian has a good idea of what he needs to do right now. He's doing a lot less than he wanted to do, but I know he's excited on how healthy he feels and the fact that he can get out there.
Total rookie mistake. I mean, it's camp for everybody. I've been doing this 30 years, like ever since cell phones became a thing. It's like you walk into a venue like that. So it's just like an auditorium, basically, is what it is, a small auditorium where Kyle and the players do their stuff. And then there's, you know, like auditorium seating in there. And there's two things that you do. Everybody now has a little camera stand and they put their phone on it. So like they do that and everybody's videoing the whole thing. And then the second thing you do is you turn your ringer off on your phone. Like that's a total rookie mistake. So it actually distracted me from what Kyle said there, but, I think everybody's going to be kind of not pessimistic, just kind of looking with kind of a weird eye in terms of Christian McCaffrey. But from everything that everybody's saying, like when I was down there about a month or so ago and McCaffrey said right there in front of me, like, I'm healthy. And then all the things that were written and said about it afterwards, yeah, we don't believe he's healthy. We don't believe he's healthy. Well, there's two things there's about three things that actually lead you to believe that he is healthy, which is A, they're saying he's healthy, which isn't always the case. And I know it's lying season 24/7, 365. And I've told you that a million times. But the other thing is, I wouldn't have traded Jordan Mason. I like Jordan James, the kid they got out of Oregon. I really do. I think he's actually going to supplant Grendo as the second back. I really like Isaac Grendo, and he has a ton of talent. But I just think that he's still learning how to run in that zone scheme. And that's what I've been told as well. Get that foot in the ground and go. He's just very inexperienced, and so he's going to be a nice player, but I think Jordan James is. And they run that – they run zone at Oregon, and it's just like, boom, get your foot in the ground and go, and he can do that. And we've seen a couple of guys from Oregon come into the league very quickly, Bucky Irving being one from Tampa Bay, because they're versed in that system that they move pretty quickly, and they do a pretty good job of it. So I could see Jordan James supplanting him, but my point here is that Jordan Mason – was leading the NFL in rushing at one point. He's not Christian McCaffrey, and I'm certainly not saying he is, but he understands the system. And he only went to Minnesota for, 2 years and, like, I don't know, $7 million or something. Like, it wasn't very much money. And so for you to trade Jordan Mason, you didn't do it for money. He's a talented guy. It's not like he stinks. You did it as an organization because you believe Christian McCaffrey is going to be healthy. And when Christian McCaffrey is healthy, what does that mean? He's going to play a lot of snaps. There's just Christian's playing. You heard Kyle say it. I mean, Christian's playing. That's just the way it's going to be. So Do they need depth in the backfield? Sure they do. You know, Kyle Shanahan running backs get hurt. I don't care if their name is Christian McCaffrey or not. So he can get he's going to need a blow at some point. I think Jordan James is good enough. I think Grendo is good enough. I feel like they feel like they're comfortable with it. And if they weren't and they thought the injury was an issue, this is the bigger picture. If they thought the injury was a major deal, then they wouldn't have traded Jordan Mason. So that's why I know he's healthy. All right, so there's where we are as far as the chalkboard. Browns, ankle, CMC's healthy. Wide receivers, do they need one? Robinson, Cowing, Jennings. I put Watkins in there as well. Those are the receivers yesterday. Could they make a move for Amari Cooper? I really think it is up to Jordan Watkins. I think however Watkins is perceived by the 49ers, then they might need a guy. But again, Pearsall's hammy. I don't know how the organization feels about him. I mean, they're optimistic, and that's what they say. But I wonder behind closed doors, so John Lynch shuts his door and says to Kyle and the rest of the guys, "We got an issue here? Like, do we have, you know, we had the hammy last year. We had the shooting, unfortunately. We have a hammy now. Do we got a guy that we can rely on?" Because as I said, if you ask me who are the top five most important 49ers for the 2025 season, I don't know if Ricky's one, but he's probably two or three. I mean, he's in there. The young guys, Mikael Williams is there. The young defensive linemen are there. I mean, a lot of my issues are on the defensive side. Whoever's going to be the left guard, that's kind of an issue. It's a major issue. You want to pound the ball at people and be physical. So that's a major issue. But Pearsall's right up there because I know what Juwan Jennings can do. And I know that they have Kittle and they have McCaffrey, but they need a true X wide receiver. And you're looking at Pearsall going, "Hey dude, we drafted you in the first round. And what happened last year was really unfortunate and everything else. But this year we need you flying out of the gates and we need you working with Brock Purdy and we need, you know, et cetera, et cetera." We all know the story. And now to have a hammy, you're just like, oh, you know, it just stops all the momentum in its tracks. And maybe it'll be nothing. Maybe it'll be nothing, and I'm overreacting on this whole thing. But, man, right out of the gate, you're just like, oof, that's a blow. All right, we're down to, anything else on 49ers? Oh, let me play this. This is cool. So here is little George Kittle for you. It's Camp Kumbaya. They're feeling good.
It's pretty normal. If you went to like all 32 teams across the league, spring football is really fun because it's 4 days of work and then it's a 3-day weekend usually for most teams and there's no game on the weekend. So you don't have like the pressure of preparing for a game, battling through injuries, learning your plays for the week. So like that takes a lot of stress and pressure off it. So guys are just kind of naturally in a good mood and they're all excited for the year. I think it was Will Compton said that, you know, at this point in the year, everyone's like, you know, training and practicing for a Super Bowl, and everyone has that mindset. And then the season reality hits sometimes, and so that changes it. But I will say, one of the cool things about being in the building right now is that I think 99% of us are here. And so when you have all your best players are here, kind of setting the tone, setting an example, specifically because we have so many new guys, whether it's free agents, whether it's young guys, rookies, we're trying to, you know, get them in that same mindset as that we have established, and it's something that we have to reestablish every single year. So the fact that we, you know, we're all here having a good time, the vibes are high. I would say they're immaculate, and guys are practicing well, guys are competing. Juwan's still on fire, which is really fun to see. But the boys are feeling it.
You know, I like the way he said it because he prefaced it by saying, "Look, this is how everybody feels this time of the year. We all feel like, man, look at all these moves we made. Look at all the things we did. We're a Super Bowl team or this or that." Now, given the offseason that the 49ers had, I think a lot of people from a national perspective and media and all those kind of things are like, well, they shouldn't be optimistic. However, they signed guys at the end. There's a feel good to the camp. You can just feel that. Certain guys are gone. I think some of them are actually excited. They're never going to say negative things about Debo, but I think he was a drag at certain times. And then on the other end of it, we said it, Dre Greenlaw, that's a big time loss. But George Kittle kind of put it, I think, perfectly, which is everybody at this point is feeling like they're going to win a Super Bowl. But, you know, given that all the things we went through last year, I think, you know, 2024 was just brutal for the organization, for the team, all these kind of things. And so I think that they're happy to hit the reset button, have a bunch of young guys in the building, the 2024 class, the 2025 class. It just gives you a bit of an energy because those guys are unproven and they're hungry, and it's a little bit different than what the 49ers have been. Because if you think about a year ago, these OTAs a year ago before all the disastrous things happened from Brandon Ayuk's hold in to the shooting of Pearsall and all just the weirdness and the injuries and all the things that happened, a year ago they were coming off a Super Bowl loss. And I can tell you, because I was down there just about every single day, that, you know, it was just, it just had kind of a drag of a feel to it. Is, damn, we were just that close, one stop away from beating Kansas City. We should have a Super Bowl ring. It just, there was a hangover effect last year. And I'm not saying they're going to be a better football team this year, but what I'm saying is, as George Kittle just kind of pointed out there, is that there's just a different vibe. And yeah, everybody has a great vibe, but versus last year, this team especially, to where he had 2024 was like, oh my God, here we go again. And then the things started happening again and again and again and again. And then they just all knew. They were trying to come out of it, just like us fans. Like, it'll come around. It'll come around. But it never did, and we knew it wouldn't. And so it's a totally different vibe this year. Does it make them better? We'll see. A lot of young guys got to step up. We know that. All right, that's the – let me make sure I don't have anything else on the board as far as 49ers is concerned. Don't think I do. Yeah, all the rest of this stuff is either base. Oh, I have one more thing. I knew. This is not 49. Well, it is 49ers later. Here's Chip Kelly. I know you don't want to see Chip Kelly, but if you did not know, he went from head coach of UCLA to OC of Ohio State, wanting nothing to do with college football recruiting and re-recruiting and all that kind of stuff and paying players. And now he's the offensive coordinator of the Las Vegas Raiders. And he's talking about, this is interesting, he's talking about Ashton Jeanty, and there's their first round pick, the great running back out of Boise State. And there's this thing where he stands straight up in his stance. I don't know if you ever watched Boise State football, but he stands straight up. And a lot of people were questioning it. And now the running back coach has kind of changed his stance, which is a big deal there. But he makes reference to Fred Warner, does Chip Kelly here. So I thought I'd let you watch it.
So he talks about that. I gave him an analogy of an athlete being in a bent knee position to make a play. And that kind of got blown into I haven't told anybody on this team to be in any stances because I don't coach a position. So, but it's a bent knee game. You know, baseball is, if you look at before the ball snapped in baseball, like when the pitch is thrown in baseball, everybody's got their knees bent. In any athletic sport you're playing, you got to bend your knees. And if you got to run a flat run on Fred Warner, you better be in a position to run, because that dude can fly.
There you go. That's all I wanted to play. I just wanted to play that part of it. I can't believe, by the way, just as an aside, so absolutely, there you go, Fred Warner being referenced. And as you well know, because you watch the show on the regular basis, Pro Football Focus had tiers of linebackers. So quarterbacks, for example, there's four great quarterbacks in the league right now, right? The linebacker position, there's one, Fred Warner. That was it. So anyway, I just wanted to play that. And then just as an aside, I cannot believe that Chip Kelly has another job as an offensive coordinator in the league. Like, as at Ohio State, you would never get fired, because they just get great player after great player after great player after great player. Skill position players, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs. I mean, my God, they got the best wide receiver in the country right now. They just had two running backs drafted, in the first couple of two, three rounds. CJ Stroud was just there. I mean, it's just one after the other after the other. Jackson Smith and Jigba and Chris Olave and on and on and on. Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, you would never get fired at Ohio State. Just stay there, and your offense is a college offense. Like, people picked it up and figured it out so quickly. Went to Philly, went to the Niners. Like, dude. Anyway, whatever. Maybe, I don't know if Tom Brady had anything to do with that, but it's like, you're hiring Chip Kelly as your offensive coordinator? Really? We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Ashton Jeanty's not going to hurt, but I'm just saying. Wow. Okay. All right. Let's get into Buster Posey a little bit. He was on a local radio station that I used to work for yesterday. And rather than doing the rap myself, plus I didn't want to take their audio. So Jeff Young, who I often put up on the board here because he does a really good job with recapping games, recapping minor leagues, all those kind of things. I'll just leave it to him and then we'll talk about it. But as you can see right there, there is Buster talking about things, and it's not anything that's going to, I don't know, like that you didn't know. So of course he's going to express support for Patrick Bailey. But the thing about it is, okay, let me go through this and then I want to talk about it and I'll put my face back on the screen. So support for Patrick Bailey, obviously, the young pitchers he's going to talk about, obviously as a catcher, he's going to know that. And clearly he talks about the progress. Now here's what's important to me. You see down there, got to get more production at first base. Duh. He likes the progress of Bryce Eldridge that he's made at AA, still believes he has a lot to work on defensively, but made strides, blah, blah, blah. And then he preaches patience with Willy Adames. What else can you do? You're not trading Willy Adames. So there's nothing there that's really going to – let me move my camera around here. There's nothing really there that you didn't know. But let me focus on a couple of things here. First of all, the very fact that we have to talk about, as great as he is defensively, Patrick Bailey – But as bad as he is offensively, and through the history of baseball, all right, Patrick Bailey turned 26 years old yesterday. Through the history of baseball, there have been a lot of great catchers, but at some point you just couldn't stay with them because they were so bad offensively that they were just one-trick ponies. And I'm telling you, at one point in baseball, coming here shortly in the next year or two, I guess they're going to go to the system where you touch your helmet. I forgot what that's called, but you touch your helmet and then whether it's a ball or a strike, that's coming next year probably. And then a couple of years after that, if people are still complaining, I could see the robo-umps. I could see them. I think the robo-umps will be here the next 5 years. So then where's Patrick Bailey's value? He's a great pitch framer. That's probably the thing he does best, better than anything else. He blocks balls well. He throws well. All those kind of things. But the best thing he does where he is elite, 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 is he frames pitches. He still strikes. That's what he does. And so the value of that and the way that the Giants put that into the equation as far as he doesn't hit, but man, he steals a lot of strikes. Only the Giants know that. But I'm just the very fact, I guess, and I just from a media perspective, and maybe this is the media guy in me coming out. But the very fact that Buster Posey, a great catcher himself, has to be asked, what's up with Patrick Bailey when he's so good defensively because his bat is so bad. And he went on to say that, he feels for him because he knows how difficult it is to get in the squat, put on the gear, and then be counted on to hit. But at some point, look, we're not asking Patrick Bailey to hit like Buster Posey hit. Buster Posey was an MVP. You don't have to hit like that, all right? But you just can't be the liability that Patrick Bailey is in this lineup. Put him on the Yankees. Put him on the, that's at some point, I do wonder, at the age of 26, if there's a team who would value Patrick Bailey, who has the hitting in their lineup to be able to say, we don't care if he hits a .176. And it's not just to kind of back up for a minute on Bailey, it's not just a .176 or whatever it is. I'm just throwing it out there because it's about that. I didn't check today. But it's the bats are terrible. Like the other day in Detroit when there's no out and Patrick Bailey's up and he hits an oppo soft fly ball to left field. And it's not even left field. It's to like deep shortstop so that they can't score a run. It was 4-3. There's guys on second and third. And Adames is on third. He's got decent speed. So guys on second and third, no out. He's pinch hitting for some reason for Sam Huff because it's a right-left matchup, whatever. Doesn't matter at this point with Bailey. He's bad against both. And he delivers this soft fly ball to short left field and on the first pitch. And it's like, that's a bad at bat. And it's almost like, let me just get the at bat over with. And again, I realize what Bailey brings to the table, but the Giants are always going to be offensively challenged. In our lifetime, when have they not been? Now, if you're an older person and you're watching this, Mays and Cepeda and all, yeah, I get it. And Barry and all that. But in modern times, even when they won World Series, 10, 12, 14, they were still offensively challenged. It was pitching and timely hitting, pitching and timely hitting. That's what they did. And that's what they're always going to do as long as they're in this ballpark. So they're always going to be offensively challenged. So are you going to, or how long are you going to be able to say, this guy is so good defensively and steals so many strikes, he's so elite at that, the best in the league, that we're going to be able to carry a guy who's hitting 176, and not only 176, they're bad at bats. Like, I'll give Lamont Wade Jr. some credit here. I hate to, and it pains me very deeply, but he's having better at bats. He might be he's hitting the ball a little bit harder. He doesn't look completely 100% lost, even though I'd replace him in a heartbeat if I could, because it's a bottom line business. But Bailey's at bats get worse and worse and worse. And I know the thing that's frustrating about it is, and Buster talked about it, is that you've got to do both things, and it's more difficult than any other position. I get it. And he's done a good job of just like, okay, I'm still going to be a great defender, even though my bat is shit. But when you're offensively challenged like the Giants, how long can you do that? And the fact that we're already having to bring it up to Buster Posey of, hey, he's really great defensively. No one's debating that, but the bat. And for at some point for Buster Posey and the Giants, it's going to be, well, we're always going to be offensively challenged. So are we ever going to have a lineup in which we can say, it's okay to have a catcher hitting like this, and we'll just hit him ninth and we'll just deal with it. So we've got a pitcher back in our lineup. At some point, I just don't think they'll be able to do it. Now, the other part of it is first base is probably the biggest thing you want to know about. The very fact that he talked in a positive manner about the things that Bryce Eldridge has been doing. And we talked about this yesterday. I showed you a home run of Bryce Eldridge. He's got 9 home runs now at AA. The same thing he said I had heard way early in spring training about Bryce Eldridge, which was, and I told you this, which was the defense is not good. Defense not good. And you'd think to yourself, man, 6'7" target at first base. But that's hard, man, digging balls out of the dirt at 6'7", all that kind of stuff. So, but my thought would be then, even though it's not what you exactly want to do, and Wilmer Flores is not a great defensive first baseman, I just need a stick. So if Bryce Eldridge could come up, and I'm not asking him to hit 300, I'm not asking him to hit 30 home runs, whatever the case may be, but Buster said yesterday, they're just going to do exactly what we've been saying the last 2 days. All right, let's just keep trying, guys. Encarnacion is probably going to be up sooner rather than later. He can play some DH. Maybe he's athletic enough to play a little bit of first base. So there's that. He'll continue to give Lamont Wade Jr. some run. Obviously, Wilmer's going to get a shot in there. They're just going to mix it up, and they're going to see if they can find better production at first base. They're not going to just sit there, which is cool. Now, one thing that caught my eye, but albeit late, and this wasn't the case last night, but two nights ago, look who's at first base. Mr. DH himself, Marco Luciano. Now, I showed you the numbers for Marco Luciano, and he's got 9 home runs. It's not a great OPS. He's sitting in a hitter's ballpark. He's in a hitter's league. So, you know, it should be a little bit better than that. But if I'm the Giants and my mantra, and it sounded like that when Buster Posey was talking yesterday, and let me take that down. But anyway, your number 4 hitter 2 nights ago was Marco Luciano at first base. So he's going to – clearly they're going to go, well, can Luciano play first at all? You know, because they're not getting gold glove production out of Lamont Wade Jr. or – Wilmer Flores. So, and I'm not saying it's a throwaway position because it's not, but they're throwing everything against the wall now. Luciano's down there playing first base. Encarnacion's a good bat. Where can he play? It's basically your first baseman is going to be a DH, and then maybe Flores plays some first. It's going to be this mix and match kind of a thing. But as we've talked about, and I've told you how this is going to work, this is what organizations do in every sport. They exhaust every bit that they can out of their organization, and then they go outside of the organization. And right now, Buster wouldn't go out of the organization because it would cost so much. So Encarnacion is going to get a shot. And again, DH first base, both. Flores obviously is going to mix in there. Lamont Wade Jr., a little bit maybe. But they've given him a lot of runway here. Marco Luciano is playing first base at AAA. So they're going to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall. Casey Schmidt is going to get a shot here. The problem with that approach, though, is it's kind of like Kuminga or Wiseman, or when they would get a shot and they would make a mistake and they would look over the bench and be like, is Kurt pulling me? Is Kurt pulling me out of this game? And that's kind of what you're dealing with here, especially with young players. Like Wilmer Flores is like, I'm either DH or playing first base. I'm doing one of those, whatever. Whether I grab a glove or just grab a bat, whatever, I'm there. But all these other guys are young guys. You know, Encarnacion is a little bit older. He was with the Marlins and other teams. But, you know, okay, if I go 0-4, am I out? You know, Casey Schmidt is thinking in his mind, if I go 0-4, am I out? Because if Casey Schmidt's playing third, short, or second, he's a really good defensive player at those positions. So he could buy himself some time there. But at first base, there's no secret what they're looking for. They're looking for a stick. You got to hit. You got to hit, and you got to hit right now. Oh, Casey Schmidt went 0-4, and he struck out 3 times. Next. Gerard Encarnacion went 0-4, struck out twice. Next. Oh, no 2-out RBI for, you know, that's what's going to happen. Okay, we're going to bring up Luciano, and we're going to see if Luciano can play first base. Ooh, we gave him 2 games, 0-8, 6 strikeouts, back to the minors. That kind of pressure on a player, knowing that, look, you're not getting much of a runway here because we've just got to shuffle through, and we got to find a hot hand. And if we can't find that hot hand, then we got about another month here. So June is going to be the month of let's find a first baseman. And then by July 1st, even though it is still expensive to then start trading for somebody, that's when you start getting serious. Because at the end of the month, it's the trade deadline. So then you start having the real conversations with people. You're at the All-Star game. You're yip-yapping back and forth. Who do you got? The problem is, and I've told you this, and you already know this, you don't need me to tell you, is that with so many teams in it for the playoffs, like I keep saying Milwaukee and Rhys Hoskins because it's just perfect. He's from Northern California. They have a mutual option for next year that you could decline. He's having a good, not great season, but I mean, compared to the other Giants first baseman, he's Barry Bonds. So you're looking at it going, okay, we'll exhaust everything we can this month. And then if it's still a major problem, the next month, Buster Posey will change his tune and they'll get into the trade market. By that point, here would be my question. By that point, where are the Giants? Because the Giants just went 12-13 for the month. So we're all feeling good about the Giants. March and April, everything's great. Everybody's happy, all that kind of stuff. Now all of a sudden they're 12-13 with one more game left in the month. 12-13. And I looked at the – do I still have that up? Maybe I do. Let me see if I can share my screen with you. BKT25 schedule. Yeah, that's right here. Okay, so for the month, just to give you that, okay, so you're happy, 31-25. You'd have taken that through a couple of months of the season, no doubt. March, you go 3-1. April, you go 16-11, feeling great. Now you're 12-13, and you're minus 16 in run differential. So if you believe in run differential, minus 16 in run differential is what they are, and 12-13 for the month of May. So that doesn't give you a lot of things. So what's going to happen here is Buster's going to say, okay, we're going to give it for a test of this month, and then we're going to see what we can do. Well, you just went 12-13 in this month. And if you go 12-13 next month or whatever or something similar, I don't know how many games, whatever, how many games. But if you hover around 500 or you're like one under, that's what we talk about with the wild card chase. You're not going to be in it. So that becomes the problem is they talked about other things, and he's happy with the pitching, obviously, and he's happy with a lot of things. He's preaching. He says preaching patience with Willie Adames, which what else could he say? We're going to trade Adames. Nobody's taking that contract. So Willie Adames isn't going anywhere. It's not like a situation like last year where they were able to get some bad contracts, or 2 years ago they were able to undo some free agent contracts that they had signed in the offseason. They're not going to do that. Willie Adames is going to be patient. So that's we don't even really need to discuss Willie Adames. It's more to me the first base slot. So you've changed your closer. I'm okay with that. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. That's kind of the building of your or the base of your bullpen. So it makes me a little nervous, but I'm okay. I actually think the starting pitching is going to get better. Logan Webb is Logan Webb. I think Robbie Ray can pitch like this the rest of the season to like a 2.57 ERA. Hayden Birdsong, I think once he gets stretched out and is a real starter, I think Hayden Birdsong is going to get better and better. Justin Verlander, you just got to have your fingers crossed that he can be healthy, but you're getting 42-year-old Justin Verlander, not 25-year-old Justin Verlander. So if he can be a four starter, I'm good with that. And then we saw Landeroop the other day. Great, 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 great wheels come off. That's what a number five starter does. So I'm okay with that. Starting pitching is going to be fine. Bullpen is best in baseball. Offensively, he's got to start looking. Is it going to be just first base? If Mike Yastrzemski continues to swoon, does he become a fourth outfielder and that's where you find the offense? Where is it going to come from? Because he just said, look, it's not coming from the catcher position, and we didn't think it would. So he's going to scramble this entire month at first base, hope that a miracle appears that it's either Encarnacion or Casey Schmidt or somebody like that, and I think that's going to be very difficult given inconsistent at-bats. Like I said, pressure and inconsistent at-bats. Casey goes 0-4. He's looking, is Bob pulling me? Probably is. And you're probably not getting the at-bats the next day because now Encarnacion is going to get him. Does he have any magic in his bat? Oh, he doesn't? Okay, then we go back to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the likelihood of catching, you know, lightning in a bottle, lightning in a bat for the month of June is probably not going to happen. And then they're going to be on the trade market. But that's kind of how the process works in every single sport is you try, you go through the process, then after you've exhausted everything within the organization, you go out of the organization because it's too hard to pull this off again. So anyway, there you go. That's where you are. Giants May, I just showed you that. The Knicks win. My conspiracy theory lives. They played well last night and beat the Pacers. Now it's 3-2. So it comes down to, for me, one game in Indiana. Did the Knicks win that game? Because if you're new to the show, first of all, welcome. Second of all, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I do not think sports are on the up and up, and that's not me being negative or anything else. Just to re-explain it one more time, there's not legitimacy in politics, business, all these other places in our daily life. Why would it just be in sports that everything's on the up and up? I just don't believe it. I cannot believe that the NBA is going to allow an Oklahoma City, Indiana NBA Finals. They might, and I'll come back on Monday and be like, eh. Sorry. But I just think that it's going – I think somehow the Knicks are going to pull this out. There may be a weird call or something like that, and they go back to Game 7 and they play this thing in New York, and it's Knicks v. OKC. And I think this morning I was watching Jay Williams on ESPN, and he was trying to make the argument that the Knicks could beat OKC. I did a two days ago and did some shorts on it. I think Oklahoma City's on the verge of a dynasty. And I'm looking at this team going, okay, Sam Presti is the general manager of Oklahoma City. He presided or was a big part of the Spurs when they ran their dynasty. And the Spurs never went out and got that big play. Like, okay, we got to make a big trade now. It was Duncan. It was Robinson. It was Ginobili. It was Parker. Then it was Kawhi. And then, you know, they got role players here and there. They add role players, but they never said, hey, we got to make that big jump and we got to go, you know, get this guy. And the thing is, if Oklahoma City wins the NBA title this year, then in the offseason, it's up to other teams to catch them. It's up to Houston to make a big trade or San Antonio to make a big trade or, you know, some of these other teams in the West that are younger teams that need to add a big piece to their young core. I think Oklahoma City would look at it and say, what would we need to add? Now, what would start happening is role players around the league, and this is what I was talking about when San Antonio was so good for all those years, role players around the league before the Spurs got really good is like, I'm not going to San Antonio. What are you kidding me? I've been there. It's all right. But it's, you know, you'd rather go to another place. Same thing with Oklahoma City. Like, really? Oklahoma City? Well, they just won a title and they have a great young core. So now what you'd start seeing is some fortification of some players, some young players or veteran players who would like to fortify those guys. And I said this and got some feedback on it. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just won the MVP, obviously. He's only 26. He's not even in his prime. Jalen Williams is going to get better. Chet Holmgren's going to fill out, I think, a little bit. Got to. He's going to get better. So they've got all these guys on their team that haven't even hit their prime. To me, they look like a young Warriors or a young Spurs type of a team. They've got the general manager. They still have picks. They still have picks from the Paul George trade who they stole to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I don't think Oklahoma City is going away anytime soon. And what is bad about that from a Warriors perspective is you've got a two-year window. We know this. Steph, Jimmy, Dre, Steve Kerr, that's 2 years. And where the Warriors stole a bunch of, you know, great players in their prime, tried to beat the Warriors and couldn't. Same thing. Michael Jordan stole championships from guys like Barkley and Stockton, Malone, you know, Gary Payton. It was like, no, they're all mine. Jordan's like, mine. They're all my titles. You know, that's what great players do. They steal titles from guys in eras who deserve to win titles, but their teams are so good. And that's Oklahoma City starting to look like a team like that, where the Warriors are like, okay, let's get everything together for a two-year run here. The other thing about Oklahoma City is not only will their young players get better, but then they get that championship swag. Remember when the Warriors won that? It was like, okay, well, you're not beating us because we've already gone through it. And Draymond Green talks about it all the time. We know what it takes. Well, now if Oklahoma City gets a championship, and honestly, as a Warriors fan, you probably don't want to root for the Knicks or the Pacers, but you probably should, because the only chance I think there is for Oklahoma City to not have a dynasty is to not win this title, not get that championship swag, and then have like a general manager, Sam Presti, who I don't think he'll do this because he's done such a great job in building this team. But you could see him say, oh my God, we got to panic. Oh, we got to go get Giannis. And they take some of that young talent and they go get a Giannis. Or they take some of that young talent and it's like, oh, let's bring Kevin Durant back. I don't think that's going to happen. But the only chance is an overreaction by a general manager who gives up some of those young players who were integral in what they did, and all of a sudden they're just not as good of a team. Maybe. I'm grasping at straws here, because if they win the title, get that championship swag, aren't even in their prime, add veteran-type players, the rest of the league is like, what are we going to do for the next 5 years? Just watch these guys parade up and down, whatever it is they're going to parade up and down in Oklahoma City to win a championship. That's what it sure looks like to me. And the downside from a local standpoint in Bay Area sports is the Warriors have a two-year window here. And unless Oklahoma City has an injury, or like I said, they don't win the title and they have a general manager that panics, which I don't think Sam Presti will, then all of a sudden they're going to suck up all the titles and you're going to be like, nope, it was nice knowing you. Sorry, Steph, you're not winning anymore because we're going to take all the titles. That's what you did to teams. That's what Jordan did to players and teams. That's what, you know, Barkley doesn't have a title because Jordan was that good. You know, during that era, there were a lot of great players in that era who didn't win championships because Mike took them all. And that's what's – I'm looking at Oklahoma City, and San Antonio did it, and the Warriors did it. And I'm looking at Oklahoma City going, there's a lot of young, good players or older players who are not going to win titles because this team's going to be that good. They look like it. All right, what else do we have today? That was all off of Nick's win. Oh, we're so bummed out today because – I'll put it up on the screen here. This is his greatest moment. Rocco, as you can see, taking a shit at Dodger Stadium. That is our good friend, by the way, Pedro Gomez, who is interviewing a young Klay Thompson there. And you remember this picture back in the background. That is his a crowning achievement, no pun intended, of Rocco taking a shit at Dodger Stadium. So well done, Rocco, and rest in peace. I think Rocco, 2012 to 2025, that's 13 years. You can tell me this. I've never had a bulldog, but I had a friend that did, and they have all sorts of issues. And so for a bulldog to live 13 years, I think that's a pretty good run. Tell me if I'm wrong here. But like I said, I had a friend with a bulldog who just had all sorts of issues. And I thought that bulldogs were like 8, 9, 10 years. Again, I'm not a dog expert, but that's what I remember. But anyway, rest in peace, Rocco. I feel really bad for Klay today because it sucks, man. I mean, there's just no, you know, people who aren't dog people or animal people are like, who cares? It's just a dog. Man, Klay, like he was like Klay and Rocco. Like he didn't, I don't think Klay had like lots of girlfriends and stuff. Not that he couldn't, but it was like Rocco, 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 Rocco. So anyway, it's a big deal, man. And yeah, they don't live, bulldogs, as far as I remember, they don't live that long. So anyway, there's that. So Rocco. And then I have one sweet, clean family friendly mixture. Am I right in that about bulldogs? Let me see here. Hang on. It could be wrong. But yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, rest in peace. See, we're getting a lot of that stuff now. A lot of rest in peace on Rocco. Yeah, there's people saying that I'm right on that. I could be wrong. I'm not saying I know that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. I do have a sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol for you. But before we do that, do remember my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle. In fact, my wife is right here. Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle is the fine sponsor of this program, John Lund Unleashed. And if you click on that QR code right there with the legs there, you're going to feel better because you're going to make an appointment and my wife can tell you with her stem cell. And like I told you this before, we have a refrigerator, like everybody, a lot of people do in their garage. And then we have this square freezer, which is all these contraptions that she puts on her shoulder and her elbow. She doesn't have to do that anymore. We're going to walk around today on our road trip a little bit. And she's going to be able to walk because and walk well and not complain because Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle stem cell works. He was one of the first in California to do it. And you can trust him. So hit that QR code right there. If you can't get to the QR code, then all you got to do is Google it or use your favorite search engine, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, right there in San Ramon. If you're in the East Bay, it's a no-brainer. If you're not in the East Bay, I'm telling you, it's worth the drive to feel better. He does stem cell. It is awesome. It works. I can tell you. Well, I was going to say firsthand, but my wife does it. And I can tell you firsthand because she tells me all the time about it. So 100% truth. I wouldn't tell you if it worked so well if it didn't on her and has. So check out Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle in San Ramon for that. And then I'm doing the low T. Had low T for years, and I've done lots of different procedures for it, and this is the best one by far. Do a quick blood test, then you do a short procedure, and you're set for 4 months. No weekly shots, none of those kind of things, and you're going to feel better. You're going to have energy. You're going to be in a better mood, all those different things. You're going to feel like yourself again. It's really that simple with low T, and Dr. Riopelle does it better than anybody else because you don't have to go in for the weekly shots. It's awesome, and he gets you exactly where you need to be. To that blood test, he goes, okay, this is where we need to be. Boom, that's what you do. So check out Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, and again, you can click on that QR code to make an appointment. Thing about it, too, is that they do all sorts of other procedures. So check it out. You can see right there the legs right there in my as part of my NASCAR package below me. You can check it out or just search Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle. He is awesome. All right, let's get to it. It is time for your sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol. And I say this a lot of times when we talk about the Caboose Pistol. I'll often say to myself, or often say to you, I should say, that, you know, I've never heard this one before. I've never heard this one before. I've never heard this one before. Well, this is definitely a different one. And I like this person and everything. It's just this is a little bit weird, a little bit creepy. Let's do it.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
Yo, Caboose Pistol. Everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. John.
All right, here we go. Today's Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol, a collaboration of a soap. Have you heard about this? I love it. Sydney Sweeney is very beautiful. Many movies. She is probably it as far as a woman is concerned, but they're doing a soap. I did this on AI. I said, what's the deal on this soap I heard about? So Dr. Sasquatch, I guess that's a big, soap brand. And what they're doing is they're taking... I guess she was saying to this company, yeah, guys say that they want to drink my bathwater. And they're like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make a soap. And in that soap, it's going to have droplets of your real droplets of your bathwater. So you take a bath, we'll take that water and we'll use that water to make this soap. And they're selling it. And I bet they sell the hell out of it. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. This seems creepy to me. And on the creepo meter, this is probably like a, 9.9, pretty high up there. So there's this prominent soap company is taking real bath water from Sydney Sweeney, and they're making soap out of it. Only 5,000 bars, though, are being produced, it says. Each priced at, what, $8? That seems pretty reasonable. Accompanied by a certificate of authenticity, like a baseball card or something. So you can have a bar of soap. Only 5,000 will be made with her bathwater for $8. That seems very reasonable. I would have thought that they would have charged like, I don't know, $100 a piece. And, you know, 5,000 bars, they'd have made a boatload. I think this is just a trial run. They're thinking, how creepy are guys? Because normally if you're like, it's an endorsed soap by, I don't know, Kim Kardashian or something like that, right? Then it's women are going to buy it. Guys aren't going to buy it. I mean, we don't buy soap. I mean, I have the... You know, I have my wife. I'm not even kidding you. This is, I'm sorry to go off on this tangent, but there you go. You see the story. My wife has no less than like 21 things in the shower. I'm not even kidding you. Between, I don't know, just soaps and different shampoos and conditioners. And I don't even know what half of them are, and scrubs and all those kind of things. And I have three things in the shower. I have a shampoo, I have a conditioner, and I have a liquid body soap of some sort. That's it. Like, that's the three things that are in the shower. Occasionally, if I'm running late, I might grab a razor and bring it in there. So I got like a wet dry razor, and then I have a regular razor. And I might, just because I'm in a hurry, like do it in the shower. Occasionally, very rarely. But I might do that. But outside of that, I generally have three things. And it's not a bar soap. Like, I don't know. Does anybody still do bar soap? I don't think so, right? Like, do they even sell bar soap in the grocery store? I don't even know. Like Zest? Do they sell Zest? Or what was the one that was the Irish one? Irish Spring or something. They used to always make a big deal of that. Irish Spring. And they would cut a piece of the Irish Spring. Like, who's cutting a piece of soap off? But anyway, I digress. I don't use regular soap. Plus, regular soap, like, you'll have a hair on it or something. It's like, eh. So anyway, they're making bars of soap, 5,000 bars of soap with Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater in it. And they're saying that, you know, and it's got the certificate and everything, and all, there you go. And you probably, if it's got a certificate of authenticity, again, it's like a baseball card or something that's going to be worth something someday. Like, you're not going to use the soap, you know, can't do that. So you're just having it like on a, I don't know, shelf. There's Sydney Sweeney's bathwater's in that. People look at you like, you know, if you had a collection of certain things, you'd be like, oh, that's really cool. Hey, did you know that Sydney Sweeney's bathwater is in that? I'd be like, you're a creep. I got to go. Anyway, there you go. There's your Sweet Clean family-friendly Caboose Pistol. I agree with you. People are pathetic. I mean, I don't know. It's going to sell. That's the whole thing, is it's going to sell. I mean, I put the wrong one up. What is it? Who's the one that's got like the whole, it's the company's called Goop. Come on. Gwyneth Paltrow. I knew that it would come to me. But she's got a whole bunch of stuff, and she's making a ton off of it. She got all sorts of weird stuff. Anyway, there you go. It's your Sweet Clean family friendly Caboose Pistol. And that's weird. There you go. All right. I apologize for tonight. I will not be doing a bottom of the pint with Larry Kruger. I am out on location and we are traveling business business is what we're traveling on. So we will not be doing a bottom of the pint tonight. I will be back for a Saturday version of the show tomorrow. So make sure you are here. Make sure before you get out of here, please lay down a like for us on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, the Bay Area Sports Collective as well. Please, as it's growing as well. Very cool. We've added some new podcasts and new people, which is awesome. So John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, the Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube. Thanks for watching on X today. Please consider migrating over to YouTube and watching us on John Lund Unleashed, or at least subscribe to the channel. That's at John Lund Radio. Thanks for watching on LinkedIn and actually not working today, or whatever platform you are watching on today. Always much appreciated. Everybody have a great, everybody have a great Friday. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning on the show. And remember, any questions, comments, thoughts, put them right underneath. If you're watching later, absolutely great. Keep those alerts on. We'll be sending you stuff throughout the day. If anything breaks, even though I'll be out, I'll have the phone with me, and we'll definitely post those things. So make sure you do that. Hit me up, johnlundunleashed.com. All the social media. If you missed a show, we archive the shows there as well. Podcasts are archived on there, and the blog is there as well. So for everything Unleashed, johnlundunleashed.com. Have a great Friday, everybody.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!